when we first started talking about making this film, I was straight away extremely keen to do it because I'm passionate about climate change and telling climate stories about climate breakdown and about climate adaptation. And this one straight away presented itself as an extremely visceral and direct and emotional way of talking about what happens when you're inside a climate catastrophe. So one of the things that I wanted to show in the program was, what is it like to be inside a megafire? What is it like psychologically? What does it feel like? And part of what I was trying to achieve with the program was kind of taking the audience into that experience and giving them a sort of a visceral sense of what it's like. And I think people that watch it kind of get that. They kind of feel like they're there as well, which is, you know, really, really, really extraordinary.
Well, you hear these gruesome stories of families trying to escape when you're in this inferno. What were some of those stories from the survivors? How did they express this emotional escape?
One of the really beautiful people that we interviewed for the program was Nicole Jolly, who was a nurse at Feather River Hospital, the hospital in Paradise, the largest building in Paradise. And that morning, she got a text message from her husband saying, oh, I think there's a fire over in Concow. And soon after that, she saw the orange glow through her patient's rooms. And the fire had come up so fast on the hospital, and that's on the east side of Paradise, so it's one of the first buildings that was hit by the fire. And the first thing they had to do was get out there around 80 patients from the hospital. Many of them were non-ambulatory. They were, you know, some of them were even coming out of surgery. And she and her colleagues, the staff at Feather River Hospital, managed to do that. And then they got stuck in the hospital grounds with fire all around them. And she and many of the other doctors and nurses and the other first responders had to basically drive through fire. And she ended up taking a side street, which was extremely hot and covered in fire. And she ended up with her car, it stopped working, and I think it was also on flames. And she had to run through fire thinking that she, you know, wasn't going to make it, and managed to get herself into a fire engine only to discover that the fire truck was also stuck because it was surrounded by cars that were, you know, in flames and stuck. So that was one of the extraordinary stories that we told. You know, these are people that really genuinely didn't think that they were going to make it out of the fire. And there's, you know, one very moving moment where she was talking to her husband on the phone and she was saying, I'm really sorry, I'm not going to make it. And he was saying, you've got to try, you've got to run. And she was saying, I can't because I have to run through fire and I can't do that. So really, really extraordinary stories of survival, but also of amazing heroism. In that case, she was actually rescued by Joe Kennedy, a bulldozer operator, who drove his bulldozer at walking pace through the fire to rescue her and the firefighter she was with.
And these are people who know their place. They know that these wildfires are a part of their life. This is the reality, and they at some point may need to confront this. And because of that, you have communities that are prepared for this very event. What went right? What went wrong in Paradise?
So, yes, you're absolutely right. One of the things that's very interesting about this this place and this story is that Paradise was a community that was extremely well prepared for fire. They had a binder full of evacuation plans. They had fire drills. And the hospital I was just talking about had a fire evacuation plan that they practiced regularly. So this was a community that was extremely well prepared, and I think that surely made a difference. That meant that casualties, you know, tragically 85 people died. I think on the day, you know, the first responders thought it could have been a lot higher. But it was a fire that overwhelmed the evacuation plan, that, you know, that the plan had the community evacuating in zones, so a sort of staggered evacuation, and everybody hit the road. So the roads that could not hold that many cars, couldn't hold that many vehicles, they became gridlocked very fast, and the message didn't get out to people. The idea of staggering the evacuation meant that lots of people didn't hear, didn't find out that there was a fire. So, you know, that there are lots of questions raised about the planning and about the evacuation orders. And obviously, one of the things that I wanted to achieve with this film is to think of the takeaways from this, and ask viewers to think, is my community prepared for a fire or prepared for another climate change related catastrophe? What would I do if I was in that situation? So I hope that when people watch, they're thinking, what would I go? Would I leave? Would I stay?
And in California, there are these ripe conditions annually. We're in that stretch of time right now. There are wildfires taking place in California, and they can be sparked by any number of things. In this case, there is blame to be placed.
Well, absolutely. PG&E has accepted the findings of the CAL FIRE investigation that their equipment started the fire. And one of the interviews that we did in the program was with Mike Ramsey, the Butte County District Attorney, who's now looking into a possible criminal charges against PG&E. So absolutely, PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, is a company that has been linked to many fires. It's a huge business. And as one of our interviewees, Russell Gold from the Wall Street Journal, states that, you know, they've been involved in a number of safety violations in the past, and he makes the point that if they were a private individual, they would be in prison by now.
I know that you're very passionate about climate change. It's widely debated. The science is in. What did you see, or what are you learning as you investigate this particular fire that lends itself to climate change being an accelerant in this case?
Well, absolutely. One of the bits of reporting that we did was talking to all sorts of different first responders, people that have responded to fires in this area for decades, members of CAL FIRE who have been in this area fighting fires for kind of two or three decades. And their view is that fires are getting more frequent, they're bigger, they're happening year round. So one of the things that's happened is that the fire season, which used to run, you know, from sort of the spring until the fall, is now longer. I mean, you know, the head of CAL FIRE, Tom Porter, calls it no longer a fire season, it's fires all year round. But one of the things that's particularly interesting and relevant now, with what's happening at the moment, is that the fire season is extending into the fall, where you get these you know, red flag wind events, you get heavy winds, you get storms, you get big wind events, and that has the potential to blow fires, make them much more catastrophic. And that's obviously what was one of the big factors in the campfire, and I think clearly is happening at the moment as well.
Frontline presents Fire in Paradise tonight at 10 o'clock. Director Jane McMullen, thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely to talk to you.